Thank you very much. My name is Jill Anderson, and I'm the general director of the Pacific Repertory Opera. And since this is normally a Slow Cats Day, and since this is the Slow Cats Day during the month of our opera, we were graciously given about 5 minutes to talk about the opera before you get started on the economic impact study that I know is going to be fascinating, and which I can't stay for myself because I have a class to teach at 9 o'clock. But I did want to take this opportunity to tell you about our upcoming opera production this month. As you may or may not know, Pacific Repertory Opera has been in this community since 1985. We're now in our 21st year of producing opera here on the Central Coast. And this October, right close to Halloween, we are doing the charming children's fairy tale opera, Hansel and Gretel. And we thought an opera with a witch would be very appropriate right before Halloween. And I think you know the story. The children get lost in the woods, meet up with a witch, are about to be eaten by her, but instead shove her into the oven. She comes out baked as a giant cookie, and they are saved. And this opera is going to be presented at the Cohen Center, at the Performing Arts Center, on Friday night, October 27th, 7:30, and Sunday afternoon, October 29th, at 2 p.m., a matinee. So you can bring your kids, your grandkids, your grandparents. It's a great family opera. It will be performed in English with super titles, full orchestra, sets, and costumes, and our guest artists come from San Francisco and Los Angeles. Our conductor and director are from San Francisco Bay Area. So the children's chorus will be sung by the Central Coast Children's Choir, so maybe some of your kids or relatives are in that, so it should be a delightful production. We don't have any cast members here yet. They actually arrive next week. We do have one of the secondary cast characters, and I'd like to introduce Judith Dunlor, a mezzo-soprano from this area. She is singing the part of the Sandman, who puts the children to sleep in the forest just before they sing their famous evening prayer. And we thought, we are not the people doing these roles, but we thought that we'd just give you a little taste of the evening prayer from Hansel and Gretel. We have no keyboard, we have no piano, so we're going to have to do it a cappella. And what's more, we don't know exactly how it's going to come out over this mic because, you know, we sing opera. So we're going to give it a try and hope that you like it. If it's too loud, you'll have to let us know, you know, go like this. And if it's too soft, go like this or something. Anyway, we'll stand a little bit away from the mic. Thank you. So, great. Nobody put their hands out. Nobody did this. I guess you liked it. That will be sung by two lovely young soprano and a mezzo-soprano from San Francisco and L.A., and I hope you'll come and see the show and bring all the kids you know. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Jill Anderson. Our next duet will be by Jerry Lenthal and Pat Hedges. Gentlemen, how do you follow opera? Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the first ever economic impact of nonprofit corporations in San Luis Obispo County Summit. My name is Dave Congleton with KVEC Radio. Thank you, thank you. Oh man, thank you. Or as I'll be known this morning, Mr. Charlotte Alexander. We're glad to have you with us this morning. This is a great turnout for this first ever event. Do me a favor, if you are employed with a local nonprofit, if you're on the staff, please stand. Wow, thank you. Thank you for all you do for this community. And thank you for coming out this morning. I want to remind you that this morning's proceedings is being taped for broadcast on public access TV throughout October. Thanks to Charter Communications and AGP Video for making this possible. On your table, there's a little white card that gives you the website if you want to go for the specific dates and times that will be aired. One of the things I'm particularly impressed by this morning is I think you're going to hear from a wide array of voices, and you're going to hear from some people you may not have heard from in the past. And I think that is particularly underscored by the person that has been selected to make the official welcome. Many of you know Catherine Ryan Hyde through her great writing. Her current novel is Love in the Present Tense, but I think it's also fair to say that she is best known for Pay It Forward. It was a book, it was a movie, but I'm here to remind you that it has also become a worldwide movement. And in the last 6 years, Catherine has gone to India, she's gone to Australia, she's gone all over this country spreading the Pay It Forward message about people doing good for other people. And now there's an entire generation of young people who are growing up on this Pay It Forward idea. I mean, it's just wonderful. So in addition to being a best-selling novelist, Catherine is also the founder and president of the Pay It Forward Foundation. So she understands firsthand the challenges that everyone in this room is going through in terms of nonprofit work. So here to make the official welcome is a woman blessed with an enormous imagination. She's a great writer, but even a better friend, Catherine Ryan Hyde. Hey, dear.
Holy cow, I had no idea there were so many people here. What are you all doing up so early? How many of you are used to getting up this early? Ah, see, that makes me the only writer in the group. What can I say? Welcome, officially. I think that Dave made it sound like that was my job, to welcome you officially. Dave gave you a little bit of brief background about the Pay It Forward Foundation. For those of you who don't know too much about it, please feel free to go out to payitforwardfoundation.org and check out what we do. Sometimes I think we don't really consider ourselves a local nonprofit because of the fact that we give our mini grants and we provide our services to classrooms full of students all over the country and often outside the country. However, we are based right here in San Luis Obispo County. And sometimes I think that's a little bit of a well-kept secret. So I look out over all this and I sort of am reminded of my opinion of why the phrase Pay It Forward, the concept Pay It Forward in the movement kind of has become what it's become. I don't believe for a second that I made people any kinder than they already were by introducing the concept into the world. I think the reason this has become such a huge phenomenon is because all this stuff that people were doing all along, and I honestly believe in my heart of hearts that people are born good and want to do good, and if they're not doing good, it's just because they've unlearned it for some reason, and they can relearn it at some point. I think what Pay It Forward has done is it's just causing us to all speak about this in the same language. So there's this sense now that you can recognize it wherever it is, and there's a kind of a convergence when people talk about what they're doing in the same language. And that's what I think is so exciting about a group of people this large, all from San Luis Obispo County, all coming together to rather than reinventing the wheel all in our little separate corners, to come together and just look at the aggregate of what we do and how we do it and how big it is when you put us all together. Again, it kind of reminds me of how Pay It Forward multiplies exponentially. It's like the more people come together, the more it becomes greater than the sum of its parts. And so I think what's probably going to happen today is that you're going to end up proving what I've suspected all along, which is that we live in an unusually giving and caring community. So I thank you all for being here this morning, and I hope it turns out I'm right about that. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Catherine, and I'm sure you're absolutely right. At this point, I'd like to bring Sheriff Pat Hedges to the stage. In addition to his fine work as our sheriff, Pat is also the president of the United Way Board of Directors and chair of the Nonprofit Economic Impact Study Steering Committee. And if you know Sheriff Hedges, you know that the thing he likes to do the most is give speeches in public. It's his favorite part of the job. Here's Sheriff Hedges. Sheriff.
Thanks, David. Well, thank you very much, David. And obviously, somebody pulled some strings to pull you away from walking your dogs this morning. And we're glad you're here. Thank you. As is mentioned, this is actually our first economic impact study for nonprofits. And as such, it really took a lot more effort than the next one that's going to happen. And there are several people that were very instrumental in making this happen. And I'd like to take this time to introduce those folks that were on the study steering committee. In addition to myself, we have, and if you would please stand just to be recognized, Jill Bolsterwhite from Transitions Mental Health Association. Thank you, Jill. Robin Dudley from Dudley Business Development. David Gray from the United Way Board of Directors. Sariel Hoagwin from the Tribune. Monica Irons, the Community Impact Vice President, United Way Board of Directors. Tom Lott, Wood Group Power Operations, United Way Board of Directors. Thanks, Tom. Terry Marks from Terry Marks and Associates. Evan Mendelson from Hotline, Executive Director. Marta Peluso, Executive Director, San Luis Obispo County Arts Council. Kenneth Reiner, Cal Poly, I should have got pronunciation on this one first. Orphalia? Orphala. College of Business, Finance, Area Chair. Thank you. Biz Steinberg, Economic Opportunity Commission, Executive Director. John Taylor from Taylor Consulting Group. John, able to make it? And last, but in this case, definitely not least, Charlotte Alexander, the Executive Director, United Way. And I have to thank Charlotte for her vision, her direction, and her encouragement for taking this on. This is something that's been discussed off and on for quite some time. Questions always asked, what is the impact of nonprofits in this county? And Charlotte urged the Board of Directors from United Way to go forward with this, and thank you very much for that encouragement. We have a couple of project coordinators that worked on this. Benjamin Ebert, Ben. A little bit about Ben and his involvement in this project. While he was working on his master's degree at Cal Poly, he took on the job of designing the survey instrument, researching online computer software, and overseeing the gathering and input of the data with the help of volunteers he recruited. He received much help and support from Dr. Diane Long at Cal Poly, John Taylor and Ken Reiner from the steering committee, and the team at UCSB. He now works for Ocean Champions, a nonprofit ocean conservation advocacy group in Santa Cruz, and we very much appreciate all of your effort on this endeavor. Thanks, Ben. And we're also fortunate to be joined by King Harris. King, is he in the room or outside right now? He's probably on the air. He helped us reach out to our partners and sponsors to support the study with financial and in-kind donations and volunteered expert media advice, and we thank King for that effort. Quickly introduce the United Way Board of Directors. Once again, in addition to myself, Carl Dudley in the back. Carl, if you'd stand, please. And now that we've given Carl all that applause, if you could hold your applause while I go through the names here, and we'll just recognize them at the end. Monica Irons, David Gray, Greg Bland, Susan Kingscott, Sario Hoagland, Tom Lott, Evan Mendelson, Pat Mullen, Ingrid Pierce, Jennifer Rines, Biz Steinberg, if you'd please all stand and be recognized for your effort. And while you have a board of directors, it's actually the staff at United Way that makes things happen. And at this time, I would like to recognize the members of the United Way staff. Charlotte Alexander, once again, executive director. Rick London, Rick. Charlene Rosales, Colleen Phelan, Kathleen Richin, Ann Shaw, and Kara Edwall. If we could give them a round of applause for their effort, please. And all of your work and effort is truly appreciated in this endeavor. I know it took a lot of time, and it's, again, very much appreciated. We had one signature sponsor in this when we took this on, and they stepped up and said, sure, we're here to help. And so a big thank you goes to Tom Jones, Pat Mullen, as representatives from Pacific Gas and Electric, who is a signature sponsor. Thank you very much. And I just identify the additional sponsors. Southern California Gas Company was actually the first company to step forward. County of San Luis Obispo, Mid-State Bank and Trust, Mission Community Bank, CESLOC, Federal Credit Union, and First American Title Company. We appreciate all of that from those folks. And if you would take a look, in the interest of time, take a look in your folder. We've identified many, many other partners who have been involved in this, and thank them as the opportunity arises to tell them your appreciation. And then there's some individuals I'd like to identify for taking the time to be here and sharing this experience with us. From Congresswoman Lois Capp's office, Betsy Umhofer. From State Senator Abel Maldonado's office, Chris Raymer. Chris. From Assemblyman Sam Blakesley's office, Christine Robertson. San Luis Obispo County Supervisor Jerry Lenthal. And to be introduced a little bit later, but also on the panel, Supervisor Jim Patterson. From County Supervisor Cacho Asajian's office, his legislative assistant, Vicki Jansen. County Auditor Controller Jerry Seabach. Jerry? Thanks for being here, Jerry. Appreciate it. San Luis Obispo City Council, Council Member John Ewan. And Council Member Christine Mulholland. We appreciate all of your attendance because we know you are all very busy in your respective jobs, and we appreciate the fact you're here. And the final thanks goes to each and every one of you who participated in the work that went into this, providing the information that that we knew was out there. We weren't exactly sure which way it was going to go. We had our suspicions. I think our work bore out the fact that what we thought was the case actually was the case. I know it took some time and effort to provide that information, but in the end, I think we found that it was a very, very worthwhile effort. And so with that, I thank all of you for being here this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sheriff Hedges. As we get ready to introduce the featured speaker, let me just remind you, because we are taping for public access, when we get to the Q&A, we're asking you to write questions on the yellow cards. There are yellow cards on the table. If a question or comment occurs to you, please write it on the card, hold it up, and one of our volunteers will come by and grab the card and bring them up here, and we'll do as many of the questions as we have time for. It's a pleasure to introduce Dr. Bill Watkins. He is no stranger to the Central Coast community. It seems that time and time again we turn to Dr. Watkins to find out what is happening on the Central Coast. He is the executive director of the Economic Forecast Project at UCSB. Prior to that, Dr. Watkins served as an economist at the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System in Washington, D.C. And more to the point, he had a presentation yesterday in Mammoth, and he drove all the way over here enduring car trouble along the way just to be here with us this morning. So let's really hear it for Dr. Watkins. Thank you, doctor. All right, thank you.
Good morning. I'm a little bit technically challenged. It was control tab. All right, somebody help. Thank you. Hey, I have to tell you, you know, coming to San Luis Obispo is always pretty amazing. I am just blown away by how many people are here today. And in days, Dead Garth is very proud of this, but there is no place that we do our work that is as enthusiastically received as San Luis Obispo on a per capita basis. We have more attendees here than any place we do. And it's just amazing how active you all are in your community. And I just love to come here. And thank you for having me back. After last time I was in San Luis Obispo, I wasn't sure I was being invited back. a new picture of my granddaughter. And we need to get a little darker. Can we do that? Anyway, I've got a grandson coming in December. And so you'll have new pictures to see. I tell you, I have received over the years many, many calls from directors of various nonprofits and organizations and nonprofits. They always say, we'd like to do an economic impact study, and I always tell them what it's going to cost, and they always say thank you and hang up. And Charlotte is the first person ever. I mean, I receive these calls at least once every 6 months, and I've been getting them for 6 years or so. Charlotte was able to put this together. Part of the way that we did this was to get rid of some of my costs, and that was do the survey and the data collection in-house, so to speak, instead of the forecast project doing that. That was led by Ben and Ken Reiner, who we introduced a little earlier. So that survey administration locally was a way to cut costs and made it possible. So hate to go off, but we got to go off the slide. Maybe not. Oh, okay. There are over 1,000 nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County, and 500 of them file something called a 590, which is a tax return, which means basically they have receipts of more than $25,000. And of those that file tax return, there's about $354 million in gross income. And that's excluding the hospital, French Hospital. And they Nonprofits have always, the reason I get those calls every 6 months is, okay, what are we doing? What is our impact? Are we really having an economic impact in the community? So it's apparently, just by the numbers, there must be some amount of impact that's significant. So that's why people wanted to do it. What we did was we sent a survey, Ken and Ben sent the survey, to all the people who filed those 590 forms. And when we got back, we had 99 respondents. And I'm going to point out a little bit later that those respondents are not a representative sample. So we then approach things very conservatively. Then we used a thing called M-Plan as a statistical input-output modeling device. This is accepted in the industry. Okay, so first I'm going to just go through very quickly the profile of the respondents. Then we're going to talk about the operating impacts and the construction impacts, because what we did was separate the spending into two different components. The ARC operating component, which generated about $242 million in economic activity that appeared in the Tribune today. And then there's also the construction impacts. And the reason we model them differently is that a dollar spent on salaries is very different than a dollar spent on construction, on its economic impact and how it affects the economy. So we split those up. Okay, so we're going to look at sort of the general outline of them, purposes, clients and value, volunteers, employment, salary, and expenditures. And as we go through here, I'm going to talk about some of the assumptions we had to make. Okay, so we received about 21% response, but 57% of the gross income that was reported was represented by the respondees. Okay, so that right away tells me that big disparity, 20%, 57%, we don't have a representative sample. And so the question then was, well, what do we do? We obviously can't just multiply by five. You could divide, you take 57% and make that 100%, but then you're assuming that you're then just weighting by income. So what we ended up doing was taking a very conservative approach and saying, look, we're just going to measure the 57% of the money that's spent. So what you have here is an absolute minimum estimate. And the reason was that anything we're going to do with such a sample that's so unrepresentative is that we would have to make assumptions that somebody would have been able to criticize, because there's no perfect way to do it, no generally accepted way that would have been generally acceptable. So this is a very, very conservative. These people had about $200 million in receipts. About 43%, almost 43% of this money came from outside the county. By number, when, yes?
43% or 43 million?
43 million, I'm sorry, 43 million, sorry. By number, human resources represented about 39% of what they did. 19% were public social benefit, and education was 16%. But then you look at money, and education jumps to the first. So 47% of the money it was spent on human or education, and another 44% on human resources. They serve 1.6 million clients. Now, the first, that looks like kind of a silly number, because that's way in excess of the population of the county. Clearly, these are not unique clients, okay? So many of us hopefully will spend our life without needing the services that are offered by nonprofits, but people who need one probably need others, and they're repeat customers. So, and about every time they served a client, about $1,400 was the value of the service. Then there's volunteers. There were 20,000 volunteers. They spent almost a million hours. And then we came to one of the real issues on trying to measure the impact of what nonprofits do. Normally, we measure the impact on what nonprofits do, or what a company does, anything does, by how much people pay for it. But here, we don't have a measure because the people are receiving it for free. And what we did then was we tried to value the input, the cost of providing it, because theoretically, in a profit world, the marginal cost and the benefit are the same. So we explained a little more detail in the publication how we came about the $20.29. So we ended up valuing it at $20.29 an hour, and that resulted in about $18 million worth of value from volunteers. Nonprofits employ 3,700 people. And They spend $62 million in salaries. Out of that $62 million, $44 million goes to San Luis Obispo County residents. And as you're all aware, a large number of people drive in from other counties. And the way this was done was to measure the impact on San Luis Obispo County. If we were to look at a larger area, San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara, it would have been significantly more. So, all right. Expenditures, these firms spent $165 million. About $135 million of it was local, and $21 million was on construction. And this is 2005. This is a snapshot from 2005. We're making the implicit assumption that this is a representative year in terms of salaries and in terms of construction and spending. So what we're going to do is look at the, we split those. I told you before, we split the construction impact from the operating impacts. First, we're going to go through the operating impacts. And there's four that we try to measure. One is output, that's impact on the gross product of the county, on jobs, the number of jobs that are created, and how much salaries are associated with those jobs. And then finally, a tax impact. So output, direct, they spend $135 million. That's the direct. That's the spending by the nonprofits. The indirect is the spending by their suppliers. So when a nonprofit buys paper, the spending on that associated spending with the supplier, the paper supplier in this case, that's the indirect. The induced impact is then that dollar in all its successive rounds. So the person who sells the paper makes a profit, they pay a salary, those people go out and they spend that money. And so this is the multiplier as it works through. So the induced effect, and then we just add them up, we come up with a total. So the total impact of the operating budget is about $243 million. Employment, again, we split it up. Everything's going to be direct, indirect, induced, and a total. 2,700 direct San Luis Obispo jobs. Now, I gave you a larger number before. That was the total employees, but a large number of them live outside the county. So 2,746 San Luis Obispo County jobs, 688 indirect jobs, another 588. So we have a total of 4,022 San Luis Obispo County jobs. Salaries, direct, $44 million. Indirect to 16. 13 is the induced. Again, we got up to about $74 million. Fair amount of change. Then the taxes. Now, nonprofits don't pay taxes, at least income taxes. They do pay sales tax. Their employees pay taxes on their earnings. And that spending that is cycling through the economy also contributes to taxes. And so what we measured was about $23,800,000 in total taxes. Out of that, $11 million. Almost $12 million is state and local, about $3 million in total sales tax, which about $400,000 is local. Okay, now the construction impacts, again, we split up the same way. So the direct spending on construction, about $12 million. The indirect, $3 million, induced, $5 million, and adds up to about $20 million. So all together, we have an economic impact, an impact on the gross product of the county by about $264 million. Construction jobs, again, total up to about 214. Salaries, $9 million in construction salaries total. And also, we actually did measure these impacts by industries. If you look in your publication, you can see your industry and see how much impact the nonprofits have in your industry. And in order to keep this sort of hopefully followable and entertaining a little bit, we didn't go through all that detail here. Okay, taxes on construction spending, total taxes about $2 million. And works down to about $240 in sales tax, local tax, another $41,000. Okay. So the total impact here is this is all of the output's not added up. I'm sorry. So it should be another $20 million to there, $263 million. 4,200 jobs, $83 million in salaries, and $12 million in total taxes, state and local. Very sorry about that addition thing. Now, Charlotte, do you want me to take questions now, or would you like me to wait? No, somebody said. Sit down and shut. Okay, thank you.
Can we have the lights back on?
Where the knob is.
Thank you, Dr. Watkins. And again, I remind you, as we hear from the respondents, please put questions or comments on the yellow card, hanging them up. Our crack staff will get them. We'll also have a time for a few phone calls at the end. Oh, sorry. Okay. We have a distinguished panel of responders here. We thank Dr. Watkins for the presentation. But now, what does it mean? Let's get some analysis here. First up, we're very pleased to have no stranger to a microphone. Betsy Nash and I both had a radio talk show. Betsy Nash and I both did a column for the old Telegram Tribune, but that's where the comparison stops. Because nonprofit organizations on the Central Coast over the last 20 years have not had a better friend than Betsy. I could spend the next hour just listing all the organizations that she has volunteered for, but I don't need to tell you, because whenever you've needed Betsy Nash, she's there, right? Putting her on the spot here. When she's not helping nonprofits, Betsy has established her own successful human resources consulting firm, Nash HR Services, with clients from San Diego to Seattle. Her firm specializes in labor law compliance and employee relations. She's here to represent the business community. Betsy Nash, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Quite a mantle to represent the business community because it is so diverse, but I really appreciate the opportunity to do so. Also, I was asked to do this because having lived in the community such a long time and then leaving and then coming back, they felt that maybe I had a little different perspective on nonprofits from a little bit of a distance. I'm going to present this as sort of a bad news, good news story, if I may. Correct me if I'm wrong. The bad news is it cost $135 million for the nonprofits plus 20,000 volunteers to deliver $63.5 million in services. Is that right? Okay. Because it doesn't sound very efficient to me.
No, I don't think
so. Okay. Good. Because if that was a business, they'd be out of business. But then that's the whole point of nonprofits, isn't it? Nobody could survive running a business that way, and these nonprofits are the ones that are doing the things that no business can afford to do. So the good news of that, however that rolls out, is the equivalent, and we know that to be not people, but the equivalent of 1.6 million people receive services they may not have received otherwise. And that elevates us all as a community. Ostensibly, that also released funds for those people that received those services so they could also spend them on other things. Which is something that wasn't studied, but probably also has an impact in the community. The good news certainly is that the nonprofits directly generated 2,700 jobs in this community, and that's really quite an impact. For people that were paid directly $44.5 million. The bad news is that runs at about $7.50 per person if it's a full-time job, and I'm sure that those are mostly part-time jobs, but then they don't have any benefits, and then we're back in the same situation so many of our people are in, looking for employment here in San Luis Obispo. So that's a good news, bad news also. The county also has a low unemployment rate, and we're all competing for some of these really top-notch, high-end people that are high-quality people running these nonprofit businesses now, because that's exactly what they are. And the boomers are retiring, so that can be an issue as well. Thankfully, a lot of the boomers are volunteering, so there's the good news. Also, the millennium generation is growing up with a wonderful business sense and a wonderful heart to give back to the community, so that's also good news. Good news is $135 million spent by the nonprofits generated wealth for their suppliers, certainly, and another 1,276 jobs created
as further impact and in the supply line as a result of their employee spending. That's huge. I certainly had no idea that 2,700 jobs were created and then other 1,276 jobs were created in the supply line. So that's pretty incredible. 21 million in construction from nonprofits? Pretty awesome. I remember in 83 when Neighbors Helping Neighbors was merging with United Way, and we were giving workshops and classes on how nonprofits should make a budget. And I mean, Red Cross and the national organization certainly knew how to make a budget, but there were a lot of other nonprofits who weren't that sophisticated. And I understand we've gone past that now for most of the nonprofits, but we have 1,000 in this community. I'm guessing some of them are still pretty juvenile, if you will, in that regard, or unsophisticated in that regard. So my challenge is to make sure that, in fact, the nonprofits are, in fact, running as a business very efficiently. But I would also love it if some of my clients were as good at that target marketing as you nonprofits are. The needs assessment is pretty incredibly done by nonprofits. You really do figure out who needs to be served, and that's pretty incredible. And then I would also love to see the nonprofits do more collaborating so that there's less duplication of services. Hope I'm not stepping on what you want to say. But that the business community needs to do that too. We are seeing a move in that direction by a lot of businesses, and I think we can do more of that as well. The good news is $24 million was generated in taxes. Bad news is my car still needs an alignment. Where do we go from here? I think I'd like to know a little bit more about the nature of the jobs and see if what we can do to improve the job situation. I mean, I'm in HR, so I want both the business community and the worker to benefit from a mutually satisfying and enriching experience together. I also think that the nonprofit community can absolutely be setting the standard for ethical business practices. For diversity, I think you're doing a fabulous job in that regard. I think the dialogue concerning ethical business practices needs not to die with Kenneth Lay. And I think you can set the standard there. I've read some wonderful employee handbooks written by nonprofits, and I would love to see some of that in the other businesses as well. And extend that to vendor relations as well. Keep walking that talk and keep setting that. And I think that's it. So I think I was surprised they asked us to speak about that, at how many jobs, and I'm thrilled. So doing good work and employing a lot of people, and let's see if we can't figure out some way to make a living wage. That'd be nice.
Thank you, Betsy. Thank you, Betsy. Next, we'll hear from Jennifer Ryans, representing the nonprofit sector. Jennifer, of course, has worked for the YMCA for 25 years. She came up to the San Luis YMCA in 2001. Before that, she served for 12 years down at the Orange YMCA. She has a master's degree in human services administration from Springfield College and a bachelor's degree from Cal Poly in recreational administration. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Just like businesses, not-for-profits are equally diverse, and so to be one voice amongst such a wide and diverse population is a very difficult task. So I've called out a couple of pieces that apply kind of universally to all not-for-profits, and that would be the donor and the volunteer pieces. The survey actually gives us a good baseline from which to look forward from, and I really appreciate having these benchmarks and knowing where we can move toward using this data. I wanted to know if 20,000 volunteer hours was a good thing or a bad thing. Sounded good, it was a lot, but how did that compare? And so in my world, I looked to the national statistics. And in the national statistics, the average volunteerism rate is 28.8% of the population. In the Midwest, they benefit from about one-third of the adult population volunteering. And that would equal somewhere around 57,000 to 60,000 volunteers. And so, realizing that this is a representative sample, we need to do some math to determine where we are in that scale. But I can tell you that California has the worst rate of volunteerism at 25%. So certainly we can encourage folks to be volunteers. And that directly results in donations, because we know from a sociological standpoint, the more people volunteer, the greater the donation rate. And you can see that how these donations churn into service, which is where not-for-profits have traditionally been measured. How well are we meeting our mission? Our bottom line is not the dollar. The dollar is just the resource to help us meet that bottom line of changing lives, improving lives, encouraging folks from the situation that they're in currently. And so I'm talking in these broad terms, but know that we're talking about folks who are mentally ill and the arts and an array of services that not-for-profits provide. Yeah, that's okay. The other statistic that stood out for me was 44 hours a week, or 44 hours a year in volunteerism. Was that good or bad? The national average, again, is 50 hours per year. So we have a leap to go there as well, about a 10% growth rate we could expect from our average volunteer. So we need more doing more. And in that, will return us a return for those dollars in the donor rate. And so I think that this report will help us as a not-for-profit community work collectively toward selling those kinds of messages to our community. And when we have a collective voice, we'll certainly be a more powerful voice within our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Jennifer. Many of you may know that Charlotte and I recently moved from Atascadero to Napomo. And with all due respect to Supervisor Cacho, who's a great supervisor, one of the regrets we have is that Jim Patterson is no longer our supervisor. I think that Supervisor Patterson has established himself since being elected to office during the last 2 years as a very caring public official who is there to lend his name and his support wherever possible for good causes to the community. And we're very pleased to have the supervisor with us today to give us a government response to this report. Supervisor Patterson, good morning.
Thank you, David. You good? Well, it's a pleasure to be here this morning, and thank you all for taking the time to join us in what's the first annual assessment of what the nonprofit community is doing for San Luis Obispo County. And I've always had the notion that nonprofits and community groups do the things that government can't or doesn't do. And so they're certainly an essential part of our community. And I was asked to respond to the report, to some of the comments this morning of Bill's presentation, and my first reaction was how old his granddaughter has gotten since the first time I saw her. We reach an age, I think, when we stop measuring time in years, but measure it in how our children are maturing, and that was a real eye-opener to me because I've certainly reached that age now where I watch progress based on my children and other children's growing up. It's a reality check, so thank you, Bill, for that. The highlights of the report for me, and Bill's kind of a numbers guy, and you've been bombarded with numbers this morning, but I had the opportunity to preview the report, and what really jumped out at me follows that theme of what Catherine Ryan Hyde talked about this morning, and that's paying it forward. Because when you take a look at over 20,000 volunteers contributing to the benefit of the community as a whole, donating close to 1 million hours in service, equating to over $18 million worth of service that we would otherwise have to pay for. And that to me is huge. And the one phrase that Bill used this morning that stood out in my mind is that this report is an absolute minimum estimate. So we can amplify all the numbers that he has given us by a certain percentage, but it's an absolute minimum estimate, and still it's staggering to know that that kind of commitment exists in this community. The county's commitment to nonprofits goes back, I think, as far as the county does. Currently, we help distribute the CDB block grants to the other cities, which in turn distribute them to agencies and organizations under their jurisdiction. Literally, millions of dollars are spent each year in that fashion. The county has another program into distributing funds to local communities. We have our community-based organizations grant program and our preventive health grant program, where last year we distributed approximately $750,000 to nonprofits throughout the county to serve those functions. We also have another category of grants called other agency requests, where we distributed approximately $1.2 million throughout the community to these organizations. And individually, the supervisors have a fund where we've distributed over $100,000 the past several years to nonprofits to carry on the activities that nonprofits do. And those funds go mostly to smaller local nonprofits that aren't represented in this report. So when you take a look at the foundation of society as we define it and determine the health of the community, and we look at the economy and the environment and social equity, it's easier to quantify and identify the economic factors and the environmental factors, which often compete and oftentimes cause conflict, and those are where most of our attention is given, dealing with those two competing interests, if you will. That the third E in the pillar, the equity or the social equity, is often overlooked. And this study will help give us the ability to assess and quantify on the same terms that we do the environment and we do the economy, and how the social equity of our community measures up. And it's important to have that, because in government it's our responsibility to justify how we allocate funds, and certainly I have no problem justifying contributions made to the nonprofit community simply because the payback is so great. And while we take a look at what nonprofits do, the report that you haven't had a chance to read yet, but I encourage you to do so, estimates that 1.6 million clients were served by these nonprofit organizations. And again, let me emphasize, this is an absolute minimum estimate. 20,000 people contributing 900,000 hours, equaling $18 million. A couple of things to sum up, again, bringing it back to the social value of what we all do here. Let's not just think about the people that receive the benefits from the efforts that nonprofits make, but also think about all those volunteers that are contributing and paying back to the community, the fulfillment that it brings them, us, to give back to the community to make it better as a whole. And there's a couple of, the text is important in the report as the numbers. A couple of quotes from the report. Nonprofits are a powerful and effective mechanism to address collective community needs and interests. Also, contributing to nonprofits are actually investments in the quality of life on the Central Coast that we all share. Let's keep those things in mind. when we're taking a look at this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Supervisor. Please keep those yellow cards coming. I'm going to ask one of the volunteers to bring them up to me at some point so we can have time for a few questions. I'm screwed either way on this next panelist because he's my boss. If I say anything nice about him, I'm accused of brown-nosing. If I don't say anything nice about him, I'll hear about it later. No. The coolest thing about Rich Hawkins is that at the age of 18, he was a major market disc jockey in Philadelphia. What were you doing when you were 18? And that was only the beginning of a very distinguished career in broadcasting that I will not take time to rehash, but Rich has been behind the microphone or a manager for more than 30 years. He is currently vice president and general manager for Clear Channel, and he has also been committed to United Way because he's a past board member and president of United Way of San Luis Obispo County. And you can accuse me of brown nosing, but he is one of the sharpest people I've ever met and absolutely the greatest boss I've ever had the pleasure of serving. He is. And he just signed me to a new 3-year contract. But don't tell Tom Matson. Okay. Rich Hawkins, good morning.
Morning. Thank you. We're on here. Okay. Looking down the table here to the rest of the panel, making my own notes last night as I got a little advanced peek at the report and then listening to their comments this morning, I've been sitting here trying to edit out the items that would be redundant. I think we all have a very similar takeaway to the information that's been presented. And I look at it from a couple of different perspectives. One, I look at it in my role as the media and my job essentially as a member of the media as a storyteller. So I look at it in the broad strokes and I want to find, you know, what is the story that I walk out of here this morning and take back to the public. In my role working with charities over the years, my time spent working with United Way, I try to look at it also as what does it mean to those of you sitting here in this room this morning that are so active with all these nonprofit organizations. On the story end, I think it's a great story to tell. I mean, the first story that I look at and look at over $60 million worth of services provided when we're looking at essentially about half of the nonprofit activity that goes on is a huge story that I think you can take out to the public at large. How that ties back to the time that I spent with United Way, one of the biggest challenges I think that we all feel day in and day out is in that whole area of fundraising, telling that compelling story and the outcomes that are being derived from all of our efforts. And it's just the reality that in the last several years, you know, we all know we live in that Enron world. And that big concern that donor always has for us is, well, where is my money really going? What am I really getting for that money? And how are you spending my money? I think that the story here is that all of us and the public at large and the donor that you're talking to day in and day out can take great comfort in the fact that there, beyond that direct recipient, there is a great impact, a great positive impact that is derived literally from every dollar that is donated and raised by a nonprofit in this county. It appears to me that it has a far-reaching impact in the overall economic vitality of the county. And if you were to flip that around, and you know, I'm kind of a numbers geek. Bill would appreciate that. But to flip the whole study around and calculate what would be the impact, not just to the recipients of our services, but the impact to the county as a whole from an economic standpoint, it would be incredibly detrimental if we weren't all here every day doing the work, and I just absolutely salute all of you that are volunteers and that are paid employees of nonprofits, because as we all know, it would be far more lucrative for most of you to be working in the private sector. I think we all get that, and I think it's a lot of times it's easy for us to get, you know, a little defensive when the public starts to question, you know, are you being efficient with my money? And I think, you know, this is a study that, that really can be taken out to the public with pride to say, you know, we can actually measure the impact that we're having. We're having more impact than just the anecdotal impact that you see every day from the direct recipients of these programs. And that, to me, is kind of the story that I take away from this. I think it's a great fundraising story for all of us to take back out to the community as we continue to attempt to raise more money. And I think for the large part on the broad strokes, we should all be really proud of how efficiently we get all of this done.
Thank you, Rich. Greatest boss I've ever had. Again, please keep the yellow cards coming in, and we'll take some time. I'm pleased to say we're ahead of schedule. You notice that, Charlotte? Ahead of schedule. Okay. All right. Thank you, dear.
For those of you who didn't know, wait a minute. For those of you who didn't know, you know, Dave used to be a stand-up comedian. So if there's a little bit of time left at the end, he'll do about 10 minutes for us.
Yeah, take my show, please. There you go. Last but not least, representing the nonprofit funders, we're going to hear from Tim Mahoney. Tim is the district manager for a Southern California gas company serving Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. He is the company's liaison with nonprofits, business, civic, and environmental groups, elected and appointed government officials, and customers. Tim joined the gas company, which is the nation's largest natural gas distribution utility, serving 18 million consumers and encompassing 23,000 square miles in Central and Southern California. He joined the company in 1998. Prior to that, Tim spent nearly 15 years in the nonprofit sector, including work with Chambers of Commerce, the Taxpayers Association, the Industrial Association, United Against Crime, and Resource Conservation District. And he has a degree in communications from UC Santa Barbara, so he'll easily be the best presenter this morning. If the pressure isn't on, it's on now, as we say good morning to Tim Mahoney. Hi, Tim.
It should have been Cal Poly, believe me, but good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me here. You know, you hear my background, and I did spend several years in the nonprofit field. It was not always continuous. There were times when I was out of work, and I relied, and my family relied on many of the services which you all provide. So I see things from a person who's worked within nonprofit, who's been a recipient of that, and now with SoCal Gas, we have a community relations budget of which I'm able to fund nonprofits. And when I was asked to be on the panel, I thought, you know, in terms of the funding aspect, I'm kind of a modest player compared to many of the people in the room that are here. So thank you all that give more money than the gas company, and there's a couple of utility guys over here that know what I'm talking about. The project to me, I was mentioned that the gas company, and I was the first person to donate money towards this, and I get sometimes asked in the process of how this was going on, you know, why did I do that? How did I make that choice to jump on board? Because it always seems, I remember when I was trying to solicit funds, it was always the hardest to get somebody to be the first donor, especially if they could get a big first donor. Then you could go to the next person, like Clear Channel, and you could say, well, the Tribune, the print media is doing it. You'd better get on board. It just always seemed to be able to snowball. But the reason I did it is really because of all of you. You're a very generous group, a very hardworking group, And when I was talking to many of your board of directors about the project, I just knew it was the right thing to do because basically all of you. So kind of my first thing that I'm taking away on this whole event is the generosity of San Luis Obispo and our region here. I just think it's outstanding. Now, on a practical side, you know, when we look at our economy and jobs and where we're going and all these various sectors, because you got nonprofits and the hotel, motel, hospitality industry, the tourism industry, agriculture, high tech, durable goods manufacturing. This really study provides a huge portion of the data that was missing. We all knew nonprofits added a lot to our community, but there really wasn't the numbers to plug in there like you find when you look at other economic sectors and clusters. So now as we go forward charting the course of our community, many decision makers in here, this is going to be, having the facts and the data will be a big help in that. Now that being said, I think in the future we need more collaboration from the nonprofits. I think we need to see more consolidation and collaboration in the distribution and the service end. And although the figures here are good, I'm the type of person that thinks, you know, we can always do better. And I think from a funder's point of view, when you're soliciting funds, it was mentioned earlier, that's an important factor to be able to illustrate, you know, economy and efficiency in the distribution of your the social services or the aspects of, you know, whatever your nonprofit is doing. And it was great to hear the opera today. I've got a couple of performing arts folks in my family, and you know, I love to hear music and all. So I know some of my comments will be more geared toward perhaps health and welfare, social services, and others towards the arts. But it was mentioned that nonprofits are very diverse in our community, and that's a really good thing. Just like our businesses are diverse, because you know, in business, you never want to be a one factory town. As you hear about, when that factory goes under, that everything in the economy, you know, kind of shrinks, and that's not good. And likewise with the nonprofits, having diverse nonprofits is very good, because that way we can sustain across the boards many of the services that are needed by all sorts of folks. So I think a well-rounded community has a well-rounded economy, and certainly well-rounded nonprofits, and each one has a role to play in the community. So in closing, I heard that 1,000 nonprofits are here. You know, I don't know if that's a good number or a bad number, if that's too many or too little, and that's for us to decide in the future. But I want to stay with the word collaboration, and in the future, getting together more groups like this. If we can collaborate on this type of study, delivery of services collaboration can certainly be accomplished. I just know that can be done. So I'm answer any questions for you, but that's really all I had to say today. So thanks again for all your hard work.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Tim. I think what we're going to do is I'm going to ask Dr. Watkins to stand up here and take this microphone, and then I'm going to stand over here and I'm going to feed him some questions. And if any of the panelists want to chime in, please feel free to do so. And if for some reason I have butchered your question, also feel free to shout it out. Oh, here's the first one. Will Dave Congleton appear in a Speedo to raise funds for nonprofits? Adam Hill, thank you for asking that question. I appreciate it. There you go. All right, Dr. Watkins. And Doctor, as you come up, I guess I asked, do you have any comments on any of the responses you heard this morning?
We have a saying at the university that when you get in front of a classroom, your IQ goes down about 50 basis points. And one thing I neglected to mention is that if there's a possibility of doing this study in the future, this fantastic turnout and the publicity that it's received should improve the response rate of the nonprofits. One of the disappointing things was we only had 20% of the nonprofits that file a tax return, 10% of the total nonprofits responded. Hopefully those people who didn't respond, if you're in the room, you see the impact, and next time we do this, fill them out. Okay? Thank you.
All right. Is this on? Can you hear me? Now here we go. Dr. Watkins, please explain the dollar value of the volunteer hour and your source for that number.
Boy, somebody's a glutton for punishment. Okay, here it is. There's an outfit, I can't remember their name, that estimates the value, average value of volunteer service both nationwide and in California. As you would guess, California is more is higher than the national. The problem is California lags by a year. And so what we did, we took, I think it was 2004's ratio, because we knew 2005's national number, but not 2005's state number. So we took the ratio of California to the nation in 2004, applied that same ratio to the 2005 data, and came up with that $20.29.
I can add something to that, too. I have the Department of Labor statistics that have been updated for May of 2006, and for the San Luis Obispo, Paso Robles metropolitan area, the mean hourly wage is $18.09. So you can't be too far off with the numbers that he's come up with. So,
thank you, Betsy. Next question. Wouldn't an interview process of the nonprofits that don't file 590s indicate that the impact economically and socially of nonprofits is substantially greater?
Absolutely. Sure. The more respondents you get, the better it is. The those, though, with less than 25,000 in revenues are probably going to have even a combined impact that's pretty small.
Okay. Here's one. Now that we know the economic impact of nonprofits in the county, do you have a feel of what percentage of the county's need is met by these nonprofits?
That would be, you know, the professionals that look at the needs assessment and stuff like that. I'm a macro bean counter, so no.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he needs to talk louder.
Oh, you need to talk louder. Sorry.
I'm a bean counter. I don't know what the need is.
Okay. Just to clarify these numbers today, are they just for the 99 respondents? Has nothing been extrapolated?
Exactly right. We, because of the fact that our sample was 20% of the population we wanted to measure, but 57% of the money, it's absolutely clear that we did not have a representative sample. We could have made a variety of different assumptions. Every one of them would have caused somebody in this audience to stand up and say, Watkins, you're full of crap. So we decided to go with the most conservative estimate. It's beyond criticism.
Someone would like you to explain, Doctor, how the dollars attracted from outside San Luis Obispo County were calculated. Does this take into account contributed income, which may be initially generated from outside resources in Slo County?
The way I hear the question is, how do we know we got that much from outside the county, right?
Yeah.
And from the survey, this is a survey respondent said, you know, what we asked them, how much of their money came local and how much it came from outside.
How did you determine the multiplier for Slo County?
Actually, it's a very conservative multiplier. For operating expenses, I think it was end up 1.8. We use a modeling environment. There are two modeling environments that are generally accepted for this type of study. One is called NAICS. No, it's not. What's it called? RIMS. RIMS. It's done by the BLS. And then we use an outfit. It's a private business called Implan Software Program. That's updated yearly with data, and it is really the standard modeling environment for this type of impact study.
I guess here's a question for Charlotte. Someone wants to know, Charlotte, how do they get additional copies of the report and if they're available for free?
They are available for free.
They are available for free.
It's going to be posted on the United Way website.
It's going to be on the United Way website, which is? UnitedWaySLO.org is the website to download the report.
Also, the Tribune is distributing
them. You could also get copies in the Tribune this weekend. They'll be distributed for free. Is there more to the study coming? Or is this it?
Somebody disappointed?
No. They want to know if there's going to be more. I think they want more, Doctor.
This is it.
From the funder's perspective, and maybe let me start off with Tim on this one. If we merge, will we be penalized with reduced funding, i.e., where we used to be available to submit two grants for two projects, now the merged organizations can only apply for one grant? Any thoughts on that, Tim?
I don't think that's a problem. I know it isn't with my company. I've got a couple examples of that where groups have merged, and I just looked at my combined giving to them and just wrote one large check instead of two small ones. So I don't think that's a problem with folks like myself. It may be if you're going out for federal or state money, but I don't think that's a problem with, you know, kind of private individual funders like myself. The question about need, I kind of see the need as ever expanding, unfortunately, and that's really the challenge of everyone in the room, in particular people like myself. I wish I had more money to match this ever-growing need as population expands and that sort of thing, but it's really, that's kind of why this panel up here is so important, and you are too, is because everybody can play a part in trying to solve that need, and the big challenge is keeping that need smaller and smaller so people can get into self-sufficiency, but at the same time we're able to provide as a community a level of quality of life that people can enjoy what we have here to offer.
Here's another question that I'm going to throw to the panel and ask anyone to comment. How can we mitigate so many nonprofit organizations going after the same donors, therefore competing for the same dollars? How could other donor sources be reached that are not being tapped? Does anyone have any suggestions? Panelists? We've stumped the panel. It's a great question.
Statistically, from the report, we know there's a lot more donors out there. And so our jobs as not-for-profits is to multiply our hands. And so going to the convenient, obvious donors. And I can tell you that when you talk at a board level, the volunteers will immediately migrate toward corporate donors. But we know statistically corporate donors are about 20% of the giving rate. And so we need to really take our education, the things that we do know about donors, and act on that. And so we invest 80% of our time talking to private folks about their wealth and how they'd like to see it best benefit their community.
Anybody else want to comment? Bill, how does the per capita donation dollar of San Luis Obispo County compare with the national average? Any idea?
That was already addressed, okay. I think. I don't know the national.
Okay.
Per capita,
how does the per capita donation dollar of the county compare with the national average? How are we doing compared to the national average?
I can tell you the national average is 89% of a community is the national average of the number of donors. And I can tell you that the average gift is $1,620. And so, Dr. Watkins, do the math for me.
We didn't ask the average donation in the survey, I don't think. And so we don't have that data.
The next one. Since we have so many nonprofit representatives in the audience, someone wanted to know why didn't more organizations participate in the survey? And is there anything we could do to rectify that down the road?
Charlotte.
Ben.
Let's pass the buck here. Stand up, Ben. It's a statistically random sample. So it's a random sample. It's kind of like in radio. We base our ratings. We don't go out and survey everybody. We take a representative sample and extrapolate it. That's exactly what you did, Ben, right? Okay. Never mind. Oh, man.
Dave, I can...
Sure. Go ahead.
Not-for-profits are busy providing service, and that is really where 99.7% of our focus is. We don't do a good job of marketing, and we don't do a good job of responding to an outside force, and we certainly aren't good at being our own best advocates. And so we certainly can learn from the fact that we didn't get the kind of response that we might want, but we can also recognize that those folks are stretched really, really, really thin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Betsy, I'm going to throw this question to you. Armed with the results of the study, what should a typical for-profit business owner do differently regarding nonprofit organizations? Said another way, What should I be motivated to do that I'm not already doing as a steady contributor of cash, time, and services?
What can a business owner do to support nonprofits? Am I understanding that?
That he or she is not doing already.
Give your employees more time off? I mean, really, everybody's got... Don't I get applause for that? No.
Yeah.
Every employer is in a different position. I mean, employers... who's got time? Like, IBM gives a lot of their employees time off. Starbucks gives a lot of their employees time off to go into the inner city and help with literacy. Every employer can't do something like that. Every employer has to take a look at what their capabilities are, what their strengths are. That's such a general question. I guess what you would do would see what are the talents of your workforce and see if there is, in fact, somebody in there or something that you do that you can offer, and then go out and try to find a nonprofit that needs that, in which case then there just needs to be more of this communication about what the nonprofits need and what you have to offer. I guess be open to creativity. I think more communication, boy, that's a tough one, because businesses do have so much more business acumen, perhaps, than nonprofits, the small ones, perhaps. Help fill out these forms, these surveys, when they come in.
Supervisor Patterson, what would you add on to that?
Yes, prior to about 10 years ago, I was an independent business owner and have been most of my working life, and small business owner. And I think as a business owner, knowing the value of the contribution that employees are making to the community, both economically and socially, would give me incentive to allow them to do that. So I think using the information from this study to educate business owners about the value, the return on their investment of letting their employees contribute that way would help persuade them to do that. So those of you that are employers, take a look at this. Those of you that are employees, take a look at this and share it with your employer. And I think doing that will give you the leverage to get the resources you need, time or financial or whatever, to help be a volunteer for a nonprofit.
Hey, Rich, you wanted to tag on?
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, if you're an employer, you know, as a manager or a business owner, you have a lot of influence over the people who work for you, Dave notwithstanding. Certainly all of us that are in a management capacity have the ability to, at the very least, promote volunteerism among your organizations, to take a look at your organizations in terms of the goods and services that you provide commercially, and look for those ways that you can help a nonprofit through your expertise, perhaps through man hours, through labor. So if the question is, as a business or an employer, what can you do? I mean, I think those are some of the things that can have a big impact.
All right, thank you, Rich. By the way, extra copies of the report are available on the table out front, so grab some extra copies as you go out the door.
I think Rich makes a great point about the attitudinal perspective, because I think there being a partnership between business and the nonprofits, even if there can't be a dollar donation or a time donation, because our businesses, so many of them in this community, are small businesses. That attitudinal support and that culture and personality of the business being one of supporting the community is huge. So that's a great point.
Dr. Watkins, if only staff or paid organizations were counted, you missed 550 volunteers and two-thirds of $1 million donated from the region and returned to the needy right here.
I'm confused.
Apparently somebody thinks that you missed 550 volunteers and two-thirds of $1 million donated from the region.
Okay.
I merely point that out. Also, somebody would like to know what the Form 590 is and how does that differ from the Form 990 or 990-PF? Anybody know?
I think that they use the 990. It is the 990. Dr. White is actually referring to the 990. It's the same. It's the same. The 590 is the 990.
590 is the 990. Okay.
Man.
Steroids.
Here's it. Why is the 99 number not representative of the 500 to 1,000 nonprofit organizations?
Okay. Again, we sampled 25% of 20% of the population, but that resulted in 57% of the spending. If it were a representative sample, the percentage that responded should equal or be very close to the percentage of dollars. So the fact is that big disparity means it's not as representative as we would have liked.
There is a growing number of second homeowners in the county. Is there any way to measure the impact of part-time residents on local nonprofits? Also, how can nonprofits benefit from part-time residents?
Well, the measuring is it would be extremely expensive. And you'd have to do some sort of survey for people you don't know who they are because they don't live here. It's a second home. Very expensive to do that. What was the second part?
The second part is, how can nonprofits benefit from part-time residents? Anybody got any ideas on that? Go for it, Jennifer.
Yeah. I would imagine that they bring an outside perspective that those of us who've been here for some time now lack. And so when we can tap into those folks who come from other markets, they can share how collaborations have worked in their community. They can share successful fundraising techniques. And so they do seed us with outside information. And if they're owning a second home, I suspect they're a pretty good donor prospect.
Good point. What is the relative impact of nonprofits to the total economic base of the county? In other words, do nonprofits make up a small, medium, or large share of the total economic pie?
It's relatively small as measured here, $260 million, and the economy is, I think, $10 billion, $11 billion from our last report. So as a percentage, but again, I want to point out that what we measured here was the absolute minimum. We went extremely conservative at this. Speak up.
Yep.
All right.
Please.
We were extremely conservative, and this number is a minimum. You could pretty reasonably argue that the real impact is probably about twice this, almost twice. But still, it's a $10 billion economy or $11 billion in San Luis Obispo.
And do we have any sense, Doctor, as a follow-up, how San Luis Obispo County compares with nearby counties?
We don't. As I mentioned before, every 6 months or so, I get a phone call from somebody like Charlotte in some other county, and as soon as we start talking costs, they hang up. So I'm not aware that anybody – are you, Charlotte, aware of anybody having done this for a nonprofit in California?
Monterey County.
Monterey did it?
Monterey County did it.
Okay.
And we have a link to that study on our website.
Okay.
Betsy?
The conclusion here says that the $135 million in 2005 increased the county's output by $242 million, about 2% of the county's total output in 2005, if that helps.
For the panel, as a nonprofit, how do we use this report to attract more volunteers, staff, and donors? Any thoughts?
I think as a not-for-profit community, we can take this data and come from a common base and build a common, even marketing campaign around volunteerism. And, you know, pick your charity, but pick. Or, I'm not a marketer. I believe we have those in the room, and they can be those corporate sponsors who can help us to come up with those very kinds of languages that can transcend our various missions, but can certainly benefit the community at large.
And also, speaking from the governmental sector, nonprofits can use the data from this report to help their local representatives justify investments to nonprofits.
We're going to take a few more of these, and then we're going to hear from Terry, and then I'm going to give you some time so that you can come up here and talk to the panelists and Dr. Watkins individually, because I know some of you want that opportunity. Doctor, here's a question for you. You cited 20,000 volunteers, 1 million hours at $20 an hour, creating a $20 million value. The question is, what is the formula used to estimate a $20 an hour rate?
Okay, we answered that one already.
Okay, I'm just asking them. Do you have any idea what percentage of volunteers are female?
None. I have no okay. estimate. I'm All sure right. it's a very high percentage. I guess around 50%.
He's good. If nonprofits contribute 2% of county output, how does that compare to other sectors, the other 98%?
It just depends. Obviously, for this county, PG&E is huge. I know Tom Jones is here. I reviewed an economic impact study that somebody else produced for him, and what was that, 10% of the county's economy? So, you know, if this is 2, PG&E is 10.
You know, if I may, there's kind of one more part to that that jumps out for me, and it was that 25%, I believe, of all the income is new money coming in to the county. And that's a pretty substantial figure because, of course, that kicks off the whole economic cycle. So if there's any way to raise that level, that would certainly increase the overall percentage of nonprofit towards the county output.
We have several questions asking if there's going to be any identification of the 99 nonprofits who participate in the survey. You don't do that, do you?
No.
Charlotte?
We guarantee the agencies participating confidentiality.
Well, no, I'll translate. She's explaining that anybody who participated were guaranteed confidentiality, which is a standard research protocol.
Standard. The way to get people to respond to a survey is tell them nobody's going to tell anything about them.
Although I guess we could assume what one of the organizations was. Is there a statistic on how well nonprofits invest their fundraised funds? Is it efficient enough? Could direction be provided across the board? Does the panel have any suggestions? Is there a statistic of how well nonprofits invest their the money they raise?
There's no monitoring of that I'm aware of at all.
Any other comment on that? Jana, what are you saying?
She's saying the board of directors monitors their spending. That's not a statistic, but most nonprofits have board directors that are watching carefully what they spend. Sure.
Is there a reason why French Hospital was not included?
It would have dwarfed everything else and made the rest unmeasurable. It would really be a project in of its own.
And the same with the Roy Grande Hospital?
Yes.
Okay. A couple more questions here for Dr. Watkins. 1.6 million people received services in a county population of 253,000. How much duplication of services exists?
I don't think it's so much duplication, but if people see the same client over and over again, and also an individual that's in need of one service is very likely in need of a different one. So there's a huge amount of double counting in this. There's just no sense that it's unique. And one of my pet things is talking about people in the agriculture industry, and they're so poorly paid. And they, you know, they have very serious challenges in medical care, in housing, and just getting through life. And you would imagine some of these people are being served by the nonprofits every day.
Would it be a useful tool, doctor, in future surveys to separate data from the 501c3s, from the 501c4s? In other words, break down nonprofits versus foundation data?
Depends on the purpose. If basically that would be more expensive, and if one type particularly wanted to break it out, but I don't really see a general reason to do that.
Do we know how much money from outside the county the nonprofits bring in?
Yes. What was it, $43 million? And that's, almost about 20-25% of the total budgets they have.
One panelist compared money spent on the value of services and said it was inefficient. Would Bill and the other panelists comment? Note that the value of services was based on only 26 respondents. Is this an appropriate measure, given that many services are not easily quantifiable?
The value of the services that I would go with would be that $242 million. Normally, we would measure an industry by the transaction amount, and based on cost and Let me go back. That's not the 240. I'm lying. Let's get the right number here. That $135,000 is a good estimate of the value of services provided by these 99 firms, because that is their cost. We would have liked to have a transaction and measure the transaction. That's what economists always prefer. Absent the fact, since you don't charge these people, that we don't have a market transaction cost. What we did was take the cost of the service. And so that would be the estimate of the 99.
You only had 26 respondents quantify their services, so that was even a smaller reply response than the people that did reply to the survey. Do you think that if everybody had responded, you would have gotten the $135 million in terms of costs? And then the services would have also equaled that $135 million? Is that what you're saying?
Well, given the skewness of the sample, the fact that you have obviously the big spenders in here, I don't know whether the big spenders were the ones that valued that.
Yeah,
that's a very difficult estimation for any nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so I have no way to expand that again.
Right.
Jennifer?
This is not an uncommon saying for me, but you can't get a temperature with a yardstick. And I say that because dollars measure business output. Not-for-profits use dollars as tools, and you can measure some of our product in terms of the spending in the community in terms of dollars. But in terms of our product and the service that we provide, that's a matching of our mission, and you would call that, in my world, outcomes. And whether the alcoholic is no longer drinking or whether the parent who needs child care has care is really the measurement of our output, not in a dollar term.
Yeah.
Can I add one thing?
Sure.
You also don't have a good measure of the return on capital that the nonprofits may have. For instance, if you were providing low-income housing and you own the building, we would have undervalued that because we don't have a measure of the capital that's in there.
Maybe Jennifer should run for supervisor. She's getting more applause this morning than anybody else. I'd get nervous, Jim, if I were you. On the slide about county nonprofit salaries, you showed nonprofit salaries for SLO County employees and then a figure for out-of-county employees. Could you explain who makes up the out-of-county nonprofit employees?
I presume that the out-of-county nonprofit employees are just like the other out-of-county employees for any business. For some work we just did for Santa Barbara County, it looks like upwards of 40,000 people a day are commuting into San Luis Obispo County from Santa Barbara. And when I saw that, we based it on looking
at... What's that
at,
figure again, Doctor?
I'm going to say it again. So what we did, we looked at the jobs data for Santa Barbara County, and we also know that approximately 20,000 drive in from Ventura County to South Coast. And that indicated that approximately somewhere upwards 40,000 people are commuting outside the county. Where they're going to Ventura, there's probably five, and then there's also a certain percentage that own their own business, and maybe another 5,000. So somewhere between 30,000 and 40,000 are commuting outside to north from Santa Barbara. And I didn't believe that number when I saw the employment data, so we went and checked the traffic data. And it turns out, sure enough, every day there are 40,000 more cars crossing the river than there are driving through Buellton going north. Okay, so there's a large number of employees in southern San Luis Obispo County that are commuting in from Santa Maria area.
Yeah. Also, Dave, if I may add
sure.
to that, speaking for the Economic Opportunity Commission as an example, it operates programs in several other counties throughout California, and they have employees in those counties that are working for EOC.
Let's do two more. Did the cost of nonprofits include the in-kind services donated to them?
No. We took actual expenses. Again, we went with a very conservative marketing approach, or a very conservative accounting approach. We didn't, once you start saying what's the value of in-kind, you start getting open to questions. We wanted dollars that I could stand up here and not have anybody stand up and say, look, you just got it wrong.
Okay. Here's a great question to end on. Betsy, it's for you. Could you please expand on the need for nonprofits to begin paying their employees a living wage? By not paying a living wage, many staff members qualify for their own services. Wouldn't it be great if nonprofits could lead the way in this effort?
Kind of like working at, oh, never mind, I don't want to go there. No. Yeah, the living, I'm not going to run for supervisor, obviously. The living wage question is huge for all employers. And it just occurs to me that so many of our nonprofits have a lofty mission in mind. And walking the talk is huge. What I would love to see is that you not shortchange your employees when you go after your grants. That you not just assume that your employees are doing this out of the goodness of their heart and are willing to all work, or that you allow them to work for minimum wage or without benefits. When you're writing your grants, put that in there, benefits and a decent wage. The quality of your work will go up, the quality of the services will go up, the quality of life in our county will go up. Quality of the business community will go up. I don't think we can survive too long without it. I mean, housing prices are going down, and I didn't know whether to put that in the bad news or the good news. So that's my response to that.
Thank you, Dr. Watkins. Thank you, panelists. To bring this morning to a close, we're going to go to the call for action. And here's someone you may not know, but you should know. Terry Marks has only been on the Central Coast a relatively short time, but she's very impressive. She's of Terry Marks and Associates, which is a nationally known marketing and fundraising consulting group. It's based in Paso Robles in Los Angeles. She works with Fortune 500 companies and nonprofit agencies around the country to create programs that enhance the bottom line while supporting community needs. She specializes in creating strategic plans for growth and implementing programs that produce results with definable time frames. She is, I'm told, a dynamic speaker and teacher. Terry Marks, come on down.
Good morning. I did everything in my power not to leap across the table and jump on the platform this morning. I'm just going to set my speech aside for 1 second. If you have never worked for a nonprofit, if you have never volunteered for a nonprofit, if you have never been on a board of a nonprofit or received the services of a nonprofit, it is difficult for me to explain the experience of what goes inside all of those agencies that are represented here today. I have known so many executive directors that have taken funds out of their own personal savings accounts so that they could pay a Christmas payroll. I have known so many board of directors that have done the same. There are so many people in this community that need to be supported, and I am here today to tell you that we can be supported, that there is wealth in this community, and that there are ways to get supported. And this is what this beginning in terms of the nonprofit economic impact study is all about. It's also our 15th nonprofit collaborative forum. That's what that is about. And it's also your input and your ideas, what you want to see happen, what we need to do as a collective. And certainly today, I have the wonderful opportunity to be the cheerleader in the crowd and to deliver this call of action. And so I will with that. I have spent over 16 years in the nonprofit community. And before that, I worked on Wall Street. So on Wall Street, it was always about what you can get, and it was tiring. And so when I joined the nonprofit community, it was always about what you can give, not what you can get. And so what we give to our communities over and over, year through year, is inspiration and motivation. And as a teacher and as a lecturer delivering and sharing other information with nonprofit organizations, I realize the importance of what we do. And now we have an economic impact study to back us up. When I first moved to Paso Robles, because I was sitting down at the table and I was thinking, how did I get here? I don't mean to Paso Robles, I mean to the nonprofit community. And then I thought, well, my niece works for a nonprofit, and my sister is a volunteer for many, many, many nonprofits. My partner also started her own nonprofit. And my 91-year-old mother, who lives near my sister in New Jersey, I called her on the phone last week, and I get the receptionist, the same woman, and I said, hey, Lynn, I said, let me talk to the kid. And she said, well, you really can't talk to the kid. She's busy. I said, really? Well, what is she doing? She said, she's in the lobby. I said, well, what is she doing? She said, she better tell you. I said, okay, what is she doing? So I called her later when she was in a room, 91 years old. She's going to be 92 in April. And I said, hey, what are you doing in the lobby, Mom? She said, I'm selling cupcakes and cookies for Alzheimer's. She said, I worked all day, she said, from 9 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, which is her day, and she made $100. And so that fiber is what I grew up with. That thought about giving back is part of my own personal foundation. And I know it's part of all of you here today, because you're here today. So when I first moved here, I was encouraged by my friend Judith to contact a woman by the name of Charlotte Alexander. Now, Judith, I would say in the New Age, is kind of a healer type. And me being from New York, I said, yeah, all right, I'll do it. She didn't know Charlotte. She had read an article about Charlotte and also the United Way. And so, okay, I called Charlotte. When I did and we met, we started discussing the needs of our community, of the nonprofit community. She said she had a project that she always wanted to do, and she felt that her board of directors would absolutely, fully, and completely support the idea. She described it to me, and it was something that I speak about across the country all the time, our economic impact, that we're not on the corners with our hands out, that we have value, economic value to our county. So I told her that she could count me in, and there are many people here today who are also people who, and I see the smiling faces across the room, who also said, count me in. And this became the genesis of the NEIS report and today's meeting. In our sincere desire to provide you with the opportunity to continue these dialogues that will strengthen the nonprofit sector, the people we serve, and ultimately our county. And so I know they've been acknowledged, but I do want to acknowledge my friend and my colleague, Charlotte Alexander, for her vision, and I know that word has been used, and also the United Way board for their leadership. We can applaud again. But you know, Charlotte is really good at delegating. I bet David knows that. Right, David? Charlotte's good at delegating, and now the leadership has been passed to you and to me. But without our collective spirit and understanding of what is at stake, we cannot move forward as a community. And what is at stake? If we removed the nonprofit sector from San Luis Obispo County, if I was able to wave a magic wand and it was gone, what would go with it? We saw today millions in revenues, millions of direct expenditures, millions in indirect expenditures, 2,800 or 3,000 people who are employed and supporting their families, 44 million in salaries, 20,000 volunteers at a value of 18 million. Economic impact? I think so. Would you agree? Economic impact? Yes, economic impact. But we have to own that. We have to own that. First, the nonprofit community has to speak it, and we have to understand it, and we have to communicate it. But what else would we lose? I will tell you. Aside from the economic impact, which is now documented in our report, we would lose literacy programs for children, environmental education and initiatives, protection and services for our seniors, our disabled, our homeless, our mentally ill, protection and advocacy for victims of domestic abuse, animal rights, health services, hospice, athletic programs, emergency hotlines, food banks, affordable housing, support for diseases like AIDS and breast cancer and autism, and the spirit in the county, in our art and music institutions, colleges, universities, our museums, and our historic touchstones. Would we lose a lot? Yeah? We would lose a lot. We would lose the health and well-being of San Luis Obispo County, its cultural heritage, its benevolence, its ability to meet the challenges and growth and complexities of our time. We would lose a lot. We would lose the collective spirit that brings us together today and keeps us doing what we are doing day after day and year after year. And I know you've been doing it day after day and year after year. There is no measurement for social equity. On Wall Street, where I worked before I got involved in nonprofit organizations, it was easy to measure equity. But how do we measure the impact of what we do? Furthermore, how do we communicate that impact? Because that's the key. The key is communication. I have lived in two large cities in my life, and after a while, I developed what I call selective vision. There is so much need on the streets of New York and Los Angeles, so overwhelming at times, that it is easier to turn away and not acknowledge it. But it exists everywhere, and it exists here in San Luis Obispo County as well. If the hands of time were turned back, I am certain that some of the social ills of today would be lessened if there were more listening, more communication, and more prevention. As a community, it is as important to acknowledge those that listen to the nonprofit sector and understand our needs as it is to communicate deeply with those that do not. We must take this report and show it and share it and quote it, sending messages to our donors, our business leaders, our elected officials, our media, and ourselves, our employees, that there is an urgency here, an urgency about what we do, a legacy that we leave, a responsibility that we have to all that come after us. As you get in your cars today and you drive away, please think about what will inspire you to act. What has inspired you in the past? If it is knowing that the economic strength of what we generate as nonprofits, then let it be that reason. If it is knowing the impact that we have every day on millions of lives, let it be that reason. And if it's realizing that the future of our country and our county brings with it challenges, and that the lives of children and their children will be impacted by our actions, then let it be that reason. But don't let it be inaction. Let's not sit on the sidelines and believe and communicate that the nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County contribute less than any other sector in our economy. We have shown you today that this is not so. It is not the measure of a handful of people that we speak for. It is the measure of our future and our county's future and together we can revitalize a word that is often unspoken and lies idle in today's world, idealism. Thank you. I'm exhausted.
Thank you so much, Terry. We started with opera, we end with opera. Thank you so much for coming by. We're going to ask the panelists to hang out here a little bit longer. She was covering that already. We got you covered. Charlotte's always reminding me of my duties here. We're going to ask the panelists and Dr. Watkins to stick around and answer questions individually. How about one last round of applause for our contributors today? Thank you for coming. Now go out and do good things. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Tanner, Simon, Snoopy, and Ginger, get off the couch, get out the leashes. I'm coming home. Thank you.